This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network's headquarters here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, this is a really exciting day. At the bottom of the hour, I am going to be talking to somebody that you all know, I'm sure, because she was on Sesame Street. Sonia Manzano, of course, played Maria. And it's just so exciting that, you know, we've all seen Maria so many times. She was in our houses, and all the kids just would always want to see her. And she's, I think, one of the most beloved characters from the show. And she was on for 44 years, and she's retired now from the show, but not from just getting out there and helping to reach children, because she is known all over the world. You know, I have traveled and lived in many different places, and they have Sesame Street. They have Sesame Street in Israel. They have it in France. They have it. They just have it everywhere. And so kids know and love her. And she has always been a great, great spokesperson. Just out there to encourage children and everybody to just get along and be good to each other. And the new book is called A World Together. And it is written, and it's a picture book with some, you know, great words of encouragement for children, which we need at this time. It is a Nat Geo book, and it is always so exciting for me to be able to talk to anyone who's working with National Geographic, because they are the most wonderful, wonderful group of people. I always tell them that I don't know why they get paid, because I'm sure they just love the work so much. But it's just always a thrill. And I want to thank Nat Geo for sending me all these wonderful books, and particularly Nat Geo Kids. You know, there's a kid in all of us, and I love the Nat Geo Kids books. I always learn something just from reading them. And I know that you will too. And if you have any children in your life, you really should. You know, it is the best gift that you can give, because the books are always, as with everything that Nat Geo does, high quality. They last. They do last a lifetime. Those lovely yellow magazines. Well, I know I have ones from the 50s, and I think I even have some from the 30s. So it just, they last forever. They use good quality paper, and the pictures are so gorgeous. And you rarely see a Nat Geo book. I don't think I have in a garage sale when they start garage sales again, because they're just too good. They're just wonderful. And I know that all of us, you know, when you wake up in the morning nowadays, you sort of look at the news and sort of dread the news. And in the past, perhaps we might have wanted to sort of scroll through and surf the net and looked at the news. And we really don't want to do it now. It's not that great. And if you want something fun to do, and this is, I've been doing this now for the past month, actually, since I've been talking to Nat Geo people. And I've been going to Nat Geo's website, National Geographic Kids website. They have the most delightful website. And I bookmarked one of their pages. It's called Weird But True. And every morning I just click on that one, and I look at one of the little cartoon-like presentations they give. They are so funny. They are so wonderful, so beautifully done, of course, top quality. And the music is great. It puts you in a good mood. And you can forget about, you know, surfing and looking at the bad news out there and just sort of get into a good mood with Nat Geo Kids webpage. It's wonderful. I know that this morning I was on it. I was on it at 5 o'clock because I had a choice. Should I look at what happened overnight or should I not look at what happened overnight? And I thought, I don't want to know what happened overnight. I didn't want any bad news. So I went to I clicked on my Nat Geo Kids icon. I said, you know, I need to do something good. And they had there the story about the red panda. Now, I vaguely knew about a red panda and I had seen a picture, but the article they have there is so wonderful. And the red panda, much cuter. I've never been really one of those, you know, panda people. I never thought they were that adorable. But the red panda, oh, the red panda. Now that is an adorable animal. It's so beautiful. Its face is so beautiful. Its tail is so beautiful. And I think it looks like a much nicer, a more pleasant animal. Pandas always look sort of crabby to me. So I know I took my boys to the, you know, National Museum in Washington, D.C., and we stood and we watched them. And I thought, they didn't do anything for me. But, oh, I could watch the red panda for hours. And you can. All you have to do is go to Nat Geo Kids, find the kid within you, and just have fun with that website. And if you have anyone whose kids are at home, homeschooling, I mean, this has to be the place where they go all day long. Instead of watching television, they should be on the Nat Geo Kids website because there are so much games, stories, puzzles, and videos and all sorts of wonderful information. And your kids can come out of this pandemic being little geniuses. I mean, they'll know more about animals than you can possibly imagine. And it's just wonderful. So I do want to recommend that you go to just, you know, take that little thing and make an icon out of it and click on it in the morning and put a smile on your face. Because all morning I've been thinking about that adorable, adorable red panda. And I have a lot of stuffed animals. We went through that Beanie Baby phase, and I think I have like 1,000 Beanie Babies. But I never saw one of these red pandas. And the red panda, I think it's perhaps the cutest animal ever. I just love it. So definitely check that out. Now, I was going to have a guest this morning. I'm not going to have a guest this morning, so I get to talk. And so I'm going to make Ed do a little work here because I'm going to talk about several different things. And, you know, 5 years ago when I started this, if I didn't have a guest show up, I would have been panicked. Right, Ed? Ed's nodding his head. Yes, she would have fainted. She would have started crying, something crazy. Today, I don't care. I mean, if they show up, they show up. If they don't show up, I'm just going to talk. I mean, I'm here. I'm happy to be behind the microphone and out of the house because I think we are all going a little bit cuckoo in the house all the time. So for me, this is a real treat. I'm out of the house. I was in Panera's yesterday. And it's sort of bleak, you know. They have very few people in there, and it doesn't have the same atmosphere as it used to. And so this is really great. So I can talk for the whole hour, but I do have. I'm very happy that I definitely know that Sonia Manzano will be with me a little bit later. But right now I want to talk about a couple. There's just so many things to talk about, actually, because one of the things I mentioned before that so many people are coming to me and saying, oh, yes, well, finally, I'm living in this pandemic and I'm finally taking your advice. I'm listening. Not only am I listening to your program, I am one of those people who has been dreaming about writing. I didn't write and I'm going to start, or I am starting. And of course, it's funny how everyone who starts writing, the first thing they want is an agent. And I have to sort of slow them down and say, excuse me, write the book first. Don't worry about the agent. Later on, you will worry about the agent. And I'm going to have some great agents coming on in the next few months. And one of them is somebody he is absolutely delightful. Gordon Warnock is of Fuse Literary. Is going to be back on the program. And Gordon is he's one of the most delightful people I have ever spoken to. And I was thinking about him this weekend because I heard that he was involved in a 7-house auction. And that's very exciting when 7 different publishers are all eager to get a book. And so the auction was brokered by him, and it was for Mike Dawson's book. It's called The Fifth Quarter, and they got 6 figures, and I think upper 6 figures. So that's really exciting, and it's going to be, it'll be a year from now, but it's, well, what the heck? The money comes before that, and that's always exciting. And it's a 2-book deal, and the first entry is a middle grade book, a graphic novel, which they're getting more and more popular. And it was, now, you know, when you are pitching a book, you have to have sort of a, it's not easy pitching a book, pitching a movie. It's different from the query letter. In the query letter, you're not going to say this, but when you have that opportunity to meet an agent, meet a publisher, you will often compare it to something else. And so this book was compared to, and he pitched it as a roller girl meets Real Friends with a dash of Rip and Red. Well, of course, if you're an agent, you know what roller girls and meets Real Friends is, and you can imagine it in your head. And so this is a pitch, and you should all have a pitch, because you never know, when you will be actually in an elevator with somebody famous. And I have been in the elevator a couple of times. I was in an elevator once with somebody very famous in Los Angeles, and the elevator actually stopped. You don't want to hear that story. I did not come out of it very well. Let's just say, when you're stuck in an elevator and there's one calm person and one person who's not so calm, I'll tell you which one I was. Anyway, so it's good to have this elevator pitch where you can actually compare your book to something else and something else and something else and hope that the person who's just about to walk away from you will say, oh, well, that sounds interesting. But anyway, Gordon's going to be on the program again, and he's from Fuse Literary. If you want to submit to an agent, you must actually know something about the agent. And the best way to know if an agent is active and getting deals is to read Publishers Weekly. I've had a couple of authors tell me, oh, I bought this book about, all about agents, A, B, A through Z, every agent in the world. And I say, oh, please don't do that. Don't waste your money. Don't buy it in hardback, softback, paperback, Kindle, or any other version, because any of those A to Z references are out of date by the time they are put on. Even a Kindle one, they're out of date. And 80% of literary agents in New York are young women. And they have, changes of their lifestyle. So somebody who might be an agent today might not be there next week and get a better job in with a publishing house, perhaps. VP, you never know. Or head off to the West Coast. So you have to know which agents are actually today getting deals. And the only way you can discover that is by reading Publishers Weekly. They have a section there, and it's under news, and it's a list of all the big deals that have been made during the past week. So it's updated every week. You can read about the agents there, and it really is the only way to find an agent. Once you see a name there, and it's a book that you think, for example, you're working on a young adult. Well, Gordon is the ideal person to pitch it to. But go to his website. Find out what he wants, He has strict rules about what you can and cannot send him, and all agents do, and you have to really do that. And so, you know, it's up to you. Once you get that book done, it's up to you to get out there and find an agent if you're going to go that route, if you're not going to self-publish. And definitely, you know, it's worth the effort to try to get an agent. It's not always, you know, quick. It's not always easy. But if you can, you know, and if you have time, what the heck, try it. If not, and you self-publish, then what you have to do, the next step, is to find a good publicist, because a publicist can make a difference too. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. But I did want to talk about Gordon, and I want to talk about Barbara Powell. Barbara Powell is also a literary agent, one of the best. She was a comedian, actually, before she became a literary agent. And she works with Irene Goodman. Irene Goodman was the very first guest here on Joy on Paper. And when Barbara was on the last time, she gave us some good advice. And I want to play that now. And all of you, listen to Barbara Powell's advice.
Well, Patsy, let me tell you a little trick I would say to your listeners as far as querying goes. It's a really little device that I use. It's easy to remember. When you do your query letter, you're going to talk about the hook, the book, and the cook. Now, the hook is going to be something straightforward, you know, great white shark terrorizes small New England town over 4th of July. So that's Jaws. And then the book section is going to be 4 or 5 lines of premise, not plot, premise of the book. And then the cook section is going to be a small bio about you. And that bio can say, you know, I'm a stay-at-home dad with 3 children, and I wrote this in my spare time. Or it can be, you know, I've been published at such and such a place, and I got a writing grant from such and such. The bio part doesn't really matter as far as I'm not looking. It's not your resume as far as how qualified you are to write. It's just a little something about why this book, why you, why now. So again, your query letter should just simply be the hook, the book, and the cook. I think Sophie Littlefield is an author of mine who has the best query letter, and I asked her to put her query letter on her website for people to refer to. So SophieLittlefield.com, I believe, is her website, and it's just a very straightforward query, but you'll see everything broken down perfectly, what I was looking for. And that query, I mean, she sent me that query 10 years ago. She's been my client for 9 years plus. So, I mean, to me, that still stands the test of time as a very solidly written query.
Okay, well, that is great advice from Barbara Powell. Again, she has a system for going through the emails that she gets, the submissions that she gets. So she wants very specific things from you. So if you are looking for an agent, she has a wide-ranging list of authors that she works with. Go to the Irene Goodman Literary Agency, and Barbara's name is on the list there, and check out what type of book she's looking for right now. They change, because sometimes at one point, I remember one author said, well, this literary agent wrote me and said she doesn't want any books about zombies, and I happened to know the agent, and I talked to her. She said, oh, my gosh, I just mentioned it once at a convention that I like zombie books. And she got, like, you know, 400 people writing submissions for zombie books. And so she said, I can't take it anymore. So you don't know, you know, what an agent wants unless you go and look at the website. And they, again, if they say they want 350 words of your book, that's what you send them. You don't ever send anything more. They're very strict about it. I suppose they have to be, because when they get as many submissions as they get, at least 50, maybe 100 a week, it's a lot of work just to go through them. So anyway, Barbara Powell is one of the best, and I'll have her back on the program soon too. And now, you know, I have a new favorite word. It's going to be my word for the entire year. It's my 2020 word, ekphrastic. I like that word, ekphrastic. And I'm going to be talking over the next few weeks about a contest I'm going to have for poets. And it is for ekphrastic poetry. And this is intriguing because it is based on, I'm not sure yet what work of art, and then I'm going to ask people to submit a poem related to that, whatever that piece of art conjures up in your mind, and whoever writes the one that I like the best, and I'm the only judge right now. I should actually perhaps get a team of poets to work with me. Well, maybe I will, now that I'm thinking about it. And they will help me judge. It depends. If I get a lot, I'm going to need help. Which one is the best? And whoever is selected will get a $50 gift certificate, and they can go crazy. It'll be on Amazon, and they can go, I'm going to do Barnes & Noble. Amazon has enough money. I'm going to do Barnes & Noble, $50 Barnes & Noble gift certificate, and you can go crazy and buy books of poetry or dictionary or anything else you want. But right now, thinking of poetry, I want to play a poem from, let's play Squiggles, okay? It's number one, and it's from J.S. Lamb.
Squiggles on Paper by J.S. Lamb. Words and numbers on a page, writ in love or burning rage, gurgling, burgling through our brains, happy, sad, pleasure, pain. Feelings slide through pencils, pens, rhyming, chiming now and then. Who brings these squiggles to our eyes? Friends with nimble lows and highs.
Poetry is really so much fun to read and to write, and I just want to encourage everyone to do it. That's why I'm going to have this ekphrastic poetry contest, and I will talk about it next week in more detail. But right now, let's play a book buzz. We have a book buzz ready. Let's play a book buzz, and we'll go to commercial, and I'll be back. And I'm waiting for Sonia Manzano.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. The Darkling Halls of Ivy by Lawrence Block and Ian Rankin, David Morrell, Joe R. Lansdell, and six more notable authors. From a Publisher's Weekly Starred Review, here's the buzz. Set in and around colleges and universities, the 17 new stories and one reprint in this top-notch anthology explore the foreboding side of academia. As Lawrence Block, the Bernie Rodenbaugh Mysteries, notes in his introduction, each of the varied, well-told tales is as individual as fingerprints. Among the standouts are David Morrell's devious Requiem for a Homecoming, in which two alumni cast suspicion on each other while debating a 20-year-old murder, Ian Rankin's riveting The Reasoners, concerning the cover-up of a murder at a secret society in an ancient British university, and Reed Farrell Coleman's chilling And Even Three, about a psychopath at a liberal arts college. Creepy oddities include Owen King's Tale of Heroism, That Golden Way, A.J. Hartley's Supernatural, Rounded with a Sleep, and Jane Hamilton's superlative writing Maude Dubinsky, about the appropriation of another person's work. The Darkling Halls of Ivy, crime fiction fans, you won't want to miss this exemplary compilation. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing up for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back. Okay, I'm just waiting for a call in from New York City, where I think Sonia Manzano is, and I'm always so thrilled when they set these calls up for me, and I'm so excited to talk to her. Meanwhile, I want to also mention something. I talked about Barbara Poile, and the entire interview that we had is online. All you have to do is go to my website. It's radio-joyonpaper, and she's under literary agents. And there you'll have a whole hour of Barbara Poile's very, very good advice on what she's looking for when she is, she gets these submissions, and she wants so much to find the right author to represent. So she really takes a lot of care. She's very funny. And the Irene Goodman Agency is well known for being one of those agencies that really works with their authors. They want to make sure that an author isn't a one-off. This is what happens. And of course, nowadays, one of the things that so often people want, agents and publishers want series. Now, it's not always possible. I mean, sometimes you're just not the type of person who can write a series. You have one story to tell. You tell it well. And the thing is, you need an agent who's willing to work with you over many years each time that you come out with a new book. Because remember, when you're working on a series, by the time an agent has been working with you and you're on your sixth or seventh or eighth book, they know the books pretty well. They know your characters pretty well. And so it's to tell you the truth, it's easier for them. So you need an agent who's willing to put in that little bit of extra effort that each time you come out with a new book, he or she will jump into it with the same enthusiasm that they were with the first book. And get to know the characters and figure out exactly where to place your book. Because it's very important, and this is something that when you're an indie author, you have a lot of things that you have to think about. You have a lot of decisions to make, whether it's just simply how you are going to identify your book on Amazon a page, what you're going to call it. Is it a cozy mystery? Is it a novel? Is it, all the different terms that you can use. And if you're very careful and you do it right, you might be in a category where you will then become a bestseller in that category. You might not be, the number one best-selling book on Amazon books in general, but you can definitely, if you plan it right, become the bestseller in one specific category. So this is something that an agent will work with you, and they will help you make sure that you fine-tune your description of your book and picking the category of your book so that it opens up possibilities. Another thing that agents do, and again, sometimes indie authors don't think about it, the value of submitting your book to contests it is really, really worth it. And there are lists, and there are, you know, where you can find a place to submit your book. And sometimes you think, well, is it worth it? Yes, if you select the right one. I mean, don't just pick up anybody who sends you an email on the internet and say, we have a book contest. That's different. That's not the same thing. But if you're working with an agent or you work with a real list of the top-notch book contests, whether it's, of course, you know, the San Francisco Writing Contest is coming up, and that's in January. I don't know when anything's coming up anymore. You know, I just realized that, you know, everything's been canceled. I probably might have gone out to San Francisco this year. And BoucherCon is canceled, and everything is canceled. It's making me a little bit crazy because I'm not going anywhere, and it's not meeting anybody. And so that's this Zoom stuff. I really don't like this Zoom stuff, to tell you the truth. It's not the same. Nobody can tell me that a conference on Zoom is the same. It's just like church or synagogue. It's not the same on Zoom. And so we have to hope that it'll be over soon. But on the other hand, there are things happening on Zoom for writers. And sometimes if you check it out, some of the agencies are having Zoom conferences. So again, I think they're also getting lonely there. They don't see anybody. They don't talk to anybody. And so you can check it out, but go to Publishers Weekly, and that will definitely give you ideas where you should be, what you should be doing, and hope. When I always love when I hear this about auctions, seven publishing houses vying for one little book. It's a graphic YA book. It's, you know, you think, why? And that's the exciting part about it, that it can happen. It can happen to you. And you never know. So that's why you have to start writing. And remember what I tell you, a page a day. And in a year, you're going to have a book or more. It depends on what kind of a book you're writing. So it's really so, so wonderful. That's what I call the joy on paper. Just get out there and start writing and start sharing with the world your ideas. And I'm really so excited that I have a guest coming on in a few minutes who is just, she's iconic. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's, you know, just amazing. And I am so thrilled that I get this opportunity here on Joy on Paper to talk to people that I admire so much, and that I, you know, 5 years ago when I started this program, I never thought I would be talking to. And so this is what life is, full of possibilities, and you have to be ready to grab them. You have to be ready to just run with them and have fun along the way and find the joy, whether it's on paper or it's on the radio or on television, as my next guest certainly did. There's a lot of things that you can do in life to really just enjoy it. So I really want to encourage you again to think about what you're going to do with your life. I'm going to keep this guest on all the way to the end. So I'm just reminding you all that, in case I don't have time at the end, to tell you that you definitely have to get out there and start writing. November is coming up, and that is National Novel Writing Month, and it's NaNoWriMo. And I will give you more details on that. And that's coming up in November. And it's one month to write a book. Of 50,000 words. And it can be done. I know, because my goddaughter did it. And do you know, because she did it, I did it. I did it. Not last, was it last year? I don't know anymore the years. No, 2018. In 2018, I did it. I took the challenge. And for me, because November is a time of Thanksgiving, and I start cooking somewhere around the 20th, 21st of November, and I'm cooking like crazy for the entire end of the month. For me to pick up that challenge was really an accomplishment because I wrote like crazy, and I think I finished it like on the 23rd perhaps, and it was really wonderful. It was a great experience. So you can go and just write NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and you can get details on that and start signing up, because right now I am going to be talking to, oh, I can't believe it, this is too exciting, Maria! Oh my goodness, oh my dear, Sassafras and Ginger Beer, Sonia Manzano, my goodness, I can't believe it.
Oh, well, aren't you nice to be so excited? Thank you.
Wow. I'm so thrilled. And the book is called A World Together, and we have gone through life together with you. It's just so wonderful.
Yes, I guess when you're on a show for 44 years, it does feel like a lifetime.
Oh, wow. It's hard to believe. It seems like yesterday when I remember one specific, and this is funny, we lived in Texas at the time, and there's one specific show that I remember very clearly because, well, I was not a real big fan of Oscar the Grouch, but one day he gave you a yellow rose. Do you remember that? When he gave you that yellow rose and you had tried to fix his car and put a license plate on his car, and he gave you this yellow rose, and then at the end, he stepped on the gas, and you were covered with
I was just going to ask, did it explode in my face or something like that?
It did, and it ruined that yellow rose, and, you know, being in Texas, we're very sentimental about our yellow roses.
I guess so. Yes, sir. And then, yes, ma'am. That certainly left an image on your mind. Well, we were always going for the gag, and we thought that would be very funny.
It was funny and memorable. So tell us about this wonderful book. And it comes out just at the right time, doesn't it? We all need it.
Yes, it does. I hope that somehow it contributes to the work that Sesame Street started in 1969 when we, groundbreaking people of color on television, Latinos on television, an urban environment. We actually thought that we had dealt with a lot of racial issues. I mean, it was coming out of the Civil Rights Movement and President Johnson creating the Great Society. But somehow, obviously, because of what we see in the news every day, people are more intolerant of each other as opposed to more tolerant. I'm obviously chagrined and upset of that situation. But the only thing to do is proceed. So these words that I wrote for this book tell us that we're all the same. We all have the same feelings. We all feel despair. We all want shelter. We all want friends. We all feel hungry. And we are all warmed by the same sun. And that is what pulls us together, I hope, reminds us that we are the same on that level. And the only thing that's different about us is that we have different cultures. And that's what's to be celebrated, not something to be feared.
Well, absolutely. The words are so poignant. And, of course, being a National Geographic book, the photography is amazing.
Yes, the photography is really captured the nuances. I think of the words. I love this image of the kids reading, and the words are, other kids might speak a different language from you. It might sound a little different the first time you hear it, but you can still share stories. And I'm remembering when I'm Puerto Rican and born on the mainland. When kids came over from Puerto Rico and would speak Spanish to me, I'd have to like really remember words, because I wasn't using my Spanish as much as they were using their Spanish. And how tickled I was to play games with them and in a more pronounced Spanish language that I that I usually use, and I think that kids will find that interesting. They love to know how to say 1, 2, 3 in Japanese. Ichi, mi, san. Oh, wow. You know, that's a fun thing to learn about and not be afraid of things that are different from them, but embrace them.
And you have embraced children all over the world. I know I've lived in quite a few different countries, and wherever I lived, there's Sesame Street in some form.
I know. Yes, I know. You want to say, why is Sesame Street loved all over the world? And I think it's because of its humor. People laugh at the same things often. You know, people laughed at Oscar the Grouch's car, you know, covering me with soot. Because it was silly and unexpected. And, you know, and I have to say that must be the reason the show is beloved all over the world. Because we have an experience that we all share in laughter. And that is what this book is. We have experiences that we share.
And I think your place in the story was so important. I loved the Fix-It Shop. I love that everything about it was so good. I think it was so encouraging, too, that everything that you did in that program, as you said, it's so sad. I didn't expect this in 2020. I really didn't. I went, as I said, I lived overseas for a while, and somehow while I was gone, I thought everything would be okay when I came back. And I've sort of had my own culture shock that I can't believe all of this, because this is exactly what you were teaching, that, that we are all the same. And having lived abroad, it's exactly true. Everything you say here, all of your words, that's why they are so beautiful, because it is true. I've seen children in all, and in some of the places where I've lived, it was the children who taught me their language that made it so wonderful.
Yes, and the celebration of children. I'm always struck by pictures of Syrian children who are in the most terrible situation you could think of. Some, when the camera is on them, they look at the camera and smile or wink or wave. Because, someone's looking at me. Let me wave or smile. And I think that shows that children are resilient and open to new ideas. I'm sure that you've felt that in your travels, in your interaction with children from other countries.
Well, you are so multi-talented. I think not just as an actress, but also your writing, for which you've won Emmy Awards, and I don't know how many, quite.
15, but who's counting?
Oh, who's counting? And 15 Emmy Awards, and I know you didn't get it for acting, although I think you should have. I think you.
Thank you.
I think that you're. Because you created, I know the character is partly, I'm sure, based on your experiences as a Puerto Rican, but there's still a lot that you had to bring to that role to make it so believable, to make us, I mean, we believe in Maria.
It's just Well, they really wanted a person, they wanted me to be as real as possible and as natural as possible so that kids could relate to me. And I don't know if I said before, I watched a lot of television as a kid. I never saw anybody who looked like me. So I wanted to be that person for other kids. And kids can tell when you're insincere from a mile away. So the thing to be was sincere, I thought, on the show in order to connect with these kids. And I guess it's worked. Thank you for all the things that you're saying.
Did you expect, when you started off as an actress, did you ever expect that you would get, the role that lasted a lifetime? Or had you planned, to be on the stage? Were you looking at eventually going into movies? What was your, and when you were young, because you started Sesame Street at what age?
I was about 21 21, 22 when I started Sesame Street. And no, I didn't, as I said, because there weren't any people who looked like me in the movies or on television, I didn't aspire to do that. There were no Latinos or people of color on Broadway. It was Oklahoma and The Music Man, so I didn't see myself in that. Of course, I can't dance, so that's neither here nor there. But I didn't see myself in those stories. So I actually thought that I would be doing regional theater, and it would be in Shakespeare companies, because Shakespeare can be cast multiculturally. As I thought there was a chance of having acting roles in Shakespeare, because you didn't necessarily have to be white. Now, how limiting is that?
Yeah, and then look what you opened up. I mean, you really did open it up to so many, many young people to follow, and you have been an example to so many people. I'll tell you, I talked to, over 500 people. I started the program 5 years ago, and I didn't know anything about radio, and I just sort of just started it on a whim almost. And I've talked to so many people, best-selling authors, and even the Poet Laureate of the United States, but I don't think I've had such a kick of talking to anyone as I have to you. It's just...
That's wonderful, and you've given me an something that I felt when Michelle Obama's mother, Mrs. Robinson, something she said when people praised her children, Michelle and her brother, and she said, "Thank you very much. I am very proud of my children." But there were a lot of kids like them in the South Side, and that was just such poignant words. And I think to myself, I must say, you say I was the first. Yes, I'm not going to take away from how wonderful I was. Yes, I was wonderful and unique and everything. But I bet there were other kids like me who just didn't get the opportunity. So I just want to throw that out into the air.
Well, the book is called A World Together. It's a beautiful picture book, and the words are the most beautiful because you wrote them. And people, everybody, get this book. It's a wonderful book to give as a gift to any child in your life. It's a wonderful book just to have and put it on your coffee table and open it up every once in a while and to read the wonderful words. And some days you might feel happy or sad, excited or worried, glad or mad. Everyone in the world has felt these feelings. And Sonia Manzano, you have written a lovely book, and I have tears in my eyes when I look at it, and I want to thank you so much for being a joy today on Joy on Paper.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Be well.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Sonia. Bye. Okay. That is Maria. What can you say, Maria? And she's right. The book is wonderful, and it's so sweet of her that she's done this great book, and it is, I think, a book of hope. And I love the pictures at the back. Her mother was beautiful, and she has some old photographs there of her mother and her sister. And again, it's a Nat Geo book. You can't go wrong with a Nat Geo book. So if you have any children in your family, get this book. It's a great gift. I know I'm going to mention it again as we get close to. It's a perfect book. I hope that everybody and families can get together at Thanksgiving this year. And if we can, if everybody can get back together, this is a perfect book to bring and everybody can go through it on Thanksgiving Day, because it's a book that talks not just about being together, but also it talks about the foods we eat and the different things that we share all in common with people all over the world. And as I said, I lived overseas, and I can tell you that everybody is the same. We all really, but that's the whole point of just wanting to build a society where we are colorblind. And I hope that we do, because I certainly think that Sonia here, Sonia Manzano, helped contribute to the growth and the change that happened in America. And she's just a lovely person. And it's wonderful. 15 Emmy Awards. You can't go wrong with 15 Emmy Awards because she is a very, very good writer. She wrote a lot of really great scripts. And so she was on television for 44 years. Can you imagine that? It doesn't seem that way. And I don't know. She's still looking really great. I saw a photo of her. So it was a good street to live on, I guess. Anyway, she was wonderful, and I'm really, really happy that I got to talk to her. Another thing I want to recommend before I go today is I've been talking about writing, and I've invited Ken Pelham to come on the program, and he's written a wonderful book called A Writer's Guide to Building Suspense. It's called Great Danger. It's a little book. It's a tiny little book filled with absolutely wonderful information and suggestions on how, if you are writing a book, a mystery, suspense, you really have to read this book because it has all... He just points out all the little things, little details that really you should take in mind when you are writing. And he's just a wonderful guy. And he wrote a great book called Brigand's Key. And I will talk to him about that, too. He's a fine writer. You know, sometimes you get these writers, and as I read their books, I say to myself, oh, my goodness, this person is so good. It's just the book is so good, and Ken falls in that category. So I'm really happy that he's going to be on the program in the near future. And what else? Again, go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper, and check out the interview I had with Barbara Powell. And perhaps if you are ready to submit, then go to the website and find out what her requirements are. She's always looking for something good and new and exciting. And boy, oh boy, she represents some really fine, fine authors. And you never know, it could be you, but you have to try. So that's radio-joy on paper. And if you have a question or you want me to invite a particular author, email me at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will invite the author. And if you want, you can join us on the air, and we can talk together to your favorite author. Meanwhile, remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, which is what I want for Carol J. Perry. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So make sure that you start writing today. But meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And thank you, Ed, for everything. And thank you, J.S. Lamb, for your wonderful poetry. I appreciate it, and I'll play more next week. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And bye-bye now.